Hi, everybody. Welcome to Book Tales with Rand Dugas and Heather Fowler. Today, we are delighted to feature Jennifer Givon, author of River Woman, River Demon, published by Blackstone Publishing.
Book Tales, Readings, Cocktails, and Craft is a monthly podcast series with live author readings, custom cocktails, and discussions on the craft of writing. Why cocktails? We thought that having a cocktail or a mocktail while listening to your favorite author chat and give a reading would be a fun idea. Today, we are drinking the Rum River, inspired by Jen's book. The recipe is on the Hot Redhead Media blog link in the podcast description if you'd like to make it and have one with us.
Jennifer Givon, a National Endowment for the Arts and Penn Rosenthal Emerging Voices Fellow, is a Mexican-American writer and activist from the southwestern desert and the author of 5 full-length poetry collections, most recently Belly to the Brutal from Wesleyan University Press. Her novels include Trinity Site and Jubilee, as well as the novel we'll talk about today. Of the novel we feature today, Forward Review says, "Riveting, featuring lush, evocative prose and beautiful, detailed descriptions of people and places, the book is difficult to put down. River Woman, River Demon is a seamless psychological and supernatural thriller about resilience and personal empowerment."
Eva Santos Moon is a burgeoning Chicana artist who practices the ancient spiritual ways of brujería and curanderismo. But she's at one of her lowest points, suffering from disorienting blackouts, creative stagnation, and a feeling of disconnect from her magical roots. When her husband, a beloved university professor and the glue that holds her family together, is taken into custody for the shocking murder of their friend, Eva doesn't know whom to trust, least of all herself. She soon falls under suspicion as a potential suspect, and her past rises to the surface, dredging up the truth about an eerily similar death from her childhood. Struggling with fragmented memories and self-doubt, an increasingly terrified Eva fears that she might have been involved in both murders. But why doesn't she remember? Only the dead women know for sure, and they're coming for her with a haunting vengeance. As she fights to keep her family out of danger, Eva realizes she must use her magic as a bruja to protect herself and her loved ones while confronting her own dark history. River Woman, River Demon is a mysterious incantation of reckoning with the past and claiming one's unique power and voice. We are so looking forward to talking with Jen today about it.
Yeah, for sure. How are you doing today, Jen?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you both so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, we are looking forward to talking with you about your work, but also having you give us a reading a little bit later. Do you enjoy giving live readings?
I do. I am primarily, or first and foremost, I suppose, a poet at my core. And so readings feel like part and parcel of the job. And I really enjoy the energy that I receive and feel like when I'm doing a reading, it's almost like my ancestors, my spirit guides are infusing me with strength, because so much of the time I get kind of down on myself, put a lot of pressure on myself. And I feel like doing the readings actually restores me. So
that's awesome. Do you think it has to do with just feeling like a readership is really interested? Do you think it just energizes you for that reason? Because you feel the support for the work?
I think so. And I think that there's something powerful about just speaking the words aloud, and that honestly, I could probably get the same effect in some ways, just reading my work aloud and reminding myself, right, of the strength and power of the stories that I have to tell and the words that I have to say. You know, I encourage all writers to read out loud. And so I think that there's something already just with that. But it helps also to remember, like, it's not about numbers, it's not about sales, it's about those one-on-one connections. And so a live reading, you know, knowing that my work is going out there and that someone is going to hear it, even if it's just one person who gets something out of it, I feel like that's restorative to my writer soul and helps me like stay grounded in my purpose.
Yeah, I really love how you're talking about it being restorative. I didn't think about it that way, but I feel like you're right about it. I was wondering, how did this book come to be? Where did you get the idea for it? And when did you draft it?
So I am a practicing bruja, I have also been learning about curanderismo, which means the healing arts, essentially, as well as witchcraft, more or less, but not necessarily in the way that mainstream society or even Latinx culture has typically viewed brujería, which has often had kind of a malevolent intent behind it in terms of how people tend to look at it. And that really comes from colonialization and like the Catholic Church, for instance, and the way that they viewed our indigenous ancestors. But as we see with hexing the patriarchy and the witch movement of our contemporary times, the same is happening with brujería. And so we're not seeing the witches and brujas as the villains or the negative force as much as we're seeing them now as healers and bringing about necessary social change and righting wrongs and undoing injustice. And so that's very much where the idea began to grow for me, was to be able to use my magic for good. And what I do with my magic is I write, right? That's the spell for me. And I know that many writers feel this way, whether we call it magic or the muse or something else altogether. There's power and there's energy and there's strength that comes and manifesting that comes from writing it down and sharing it with others. And so that was the very first inklings that I knew that I needed to write this story. A couple of things also were happening. For many years, I'd been mothering my children through recurring bouts of depression. I'd had really difficult postpartum depression that bordered on postpartum psychosis at times. And it was something that I felt was very taboo. I was scared to talk about it. I didn't want any negative repercussions from the outside infringing upon my family or my ability or right to mother my children. And so I kept very quiet about it, unfortunately. And so much of my writing is about mothers who are going through difficult times and unveiling those taboos and being able to speak up about what we're going through. And so that was another impetus for this book in particular. And I was reading, funnily enough, psychological thrillers, and especially with unreliable narrators. And it felt like a kind of medicine for me because these were women who were either doing things that were dark or going through dark times. And often it was first person or just very close third person. And I felt like I was getting inside of the minds of women who were empowered and empowering as these psychological thrillers. So they were also page turners. And it kind of felt like I could just go hide in the bathroom for a little while for my kids and read and get healed to a certain extent. And one of the things that I noticed, though, was that there was a paucity of brown women, in particular Latina and Indigenous women. And I was like, well, how come I'm seeing mostly wealthy white women on the East Coast, for instance? I wasn't seeing myself and my family. And so I wrote the story.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you've written quite a few books, though, because you've been writing a long time, right? I mean, decades at this point. So what I'd like to know is, when you're writing a book, what is your favorite part of writing a book? And, or even this book, let's use this book as the example. What was your favorite part about writing it? And also, what's the part you like least while you're drafting?
Ooh, this is such a hard question because I love so many of the parts. I think once I know what the story is, so once I have the voice and I have the skeleton plotted in some way, I often use the hero or heroine's journey, and I use that kind of three-act structure as just kind of a skeleton to hang the story on so that I know where it's going. Because for a long time with any book I'm writing, I'm often wandering in the forest and I've got all kinds of potential and I sort of know what the story is, but you know, I usually either start way in the past and I need to bring it up to the present, or I start too late and I need to go back and give some background. So with River Woman, River Demon, I had actually started the story months after everything that happens in this book, and it was kind of the aftermath. And I was looking at that and I was like, well, wait a second, this is kind of static because everything already happened. So I redid the skeleton and realized, okay, I need to start in the thick of things when Eva is going through her dark night of the soul and she is trying to solve this murder and she's worried that maybe she's had something to do with it. I went back. So I think it's once I've realized, I feel like there's this quantum leap that happens between getting the idea, which is also really exciting, and then wandering around in the dark for a long time trying to figure out, okay, whose story is this? What's the voice? What are they telling me? And really, what is the story? Once that quantum leap happens, I feel like that's where the magic is. And then the story just starts to race out onto the page. And it's really just me trying to keep up with it. And that's the most fun part, I would say, when it feels like really just magic happening. And I don't even know where the words are coming from sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. And something else that I really like about your work in general, but this book in particular as well, is how women and women's relationships come across, how you tend to really three-dimensionalize the women in your work, which I greatly appreciate, of course. So is this an important thing for you to do? Is it a deliberate and direct effort on your part, or is it just natural to your writing?
Absolutely. Thank you for noticing that, because it is integral to why I write and how I write. As I was saying also that I didn't see my own family portrayed, one thing that I tend to get frustrated about, and not so much in novels anymore as in mainstream media and movies, and I think things are starting to change, but for a long, long time, women were just always pitted against each other. And it was like, you know, you just saw women being mean to each other. And I was like, okay, yeah, I did have my fair share of bullies and mean girls growing up, as we all did. But I mean, there were also a lot of mean boys and bullies who were boys too. So it really wasn't just a phenomenon that was limited to a gender. And then as I've been an adult, especially in the writing community, women are so kind to each other for the most part and support each other and uplift each other. And that's been my experience. And I wanted to show that how society does try to pit us against each other. And in the book, Eva does have moments where she is jealous of other women or concerned that other women are trying to sabotage her. And I think that's real. That's something that we deal with as women. And these are the images and the stories that have been crammed down our throats, many of us, since we were young. And we're taught to be on the lookout and to see women as a threat to our whatever status or success. But so she does grapple with that. And I didn't want to shy away from that, which is where I think the three-dimensionality comes from. But I also wanted to show how we do support each other and how we need each other. And that's where that sisterhood comes from. And so, but I didn't want it to be any blithe and simple sisterhood. It was earned. And she does have to grapple with all of those issues of distrust before she comes to that point where she realizes, like, wow, her sisters have her back.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciated that and enjoyed that part of the novel too. Fine. I'm curious, what kind of research did you do for this book? I know there's so much, there's layers of folklore, magic, there's police procedures in here. What was your research process like for this?
So I research all the time when I'm writing, as well as just in my own life. And so as I am a practicing bruja, I've been studying books on the craft for many years now. And so part of my research was finding out as much as I could about how other women and witches practice their version of the craft, which is whether it's Wicca or hoodoo or brujeria. And so I read, for instance, one of the integral books and, well, series of books is by Stephanie Rose Bird, who's written several books on hoodoo. And so I have my husband who has experience in the hoodoo community, and he has his own practice of spirituality that is magical. And so I would often like ask him, but I realized that that was not a part of the culture that I had as much experience with. So I wanted to make sure that I did right by especially the Black community who practices hoodoo, as Jericho does in the book. And so I wanted to make sure that I was being respectful and careful and giving accurate information, especially because hoodoo is so often in mainstream, even still today, misconstrued as voodoo, which is a Haitian religion and is not has nothing to do with hoodoo whatsoever. And people have these ideas of the so-called voodoo dolls, which is just as inaccurate as can be. And so I wanted to make sure that I was portraying truthful information. So I did quite a bit of research on that. And then the police procedurals, I had no experience with whatsoever. And I felt like I waited until one of the later drafts to go back in. And I watched a lot of YouTube. I couldn't really read and understand legal jargon and all of that. So I just went and found actual footage of trials and as many arrests and things like that. And I just watched, and I watched the body language, and I listened to the words, and I jotted down notes, and I must have watched like 100 YouTube videos, that everything I could get my hands on that had to do with Jericho and Eva's situation. And eventually I was able to close my eyes and come up with those legal scenes. So thank God I didn't have to draw too much from memory, because you asked earlier about the inspiration, and some of it hits close to home. And my family and I did deal with some of what, or a parallel to what Eva deals with, but luckily it didn't go as far as it does in Eva's situation. So I just did research for that part.
The legal and the police procedural seem pretty intimidating to get that right because it's so specific.
Yeah. And I figured that I would just approach it the way that I do with all of my writing is just make sure that I only have the details that are necessary to the story. And so I know that a lot of times, especially with beginning writers, you know, we want to make sure we get everything exactly right. And so we might include like so much information because we learned about it and it's going to be in the book.
Right. Darn it. It's going to be in there for sure.
And that kind of happened to a certain extent with Trinity Site because I just got, that's my first novel. I just got so excited about, you know, the quantum physics and the mythology and all of my ancestors in New Mexico and the Pueblos. And so I just included as much information as I possibly could, but perhaps I went a little bit overboard. And so I was very aware of that when I went into River Woman, River Demon, because I knew that I was also planning to include information that I wanted readers to learn and know about, since this is something that isn't necessarily in the mainstream. But I also didn't want to overwhelm, and I wanted to make sure that it was still a page turner and that everything was in service to the story. So I feel like that also sort of relieved me of the responsibility of, you know, needing to get everything about police procedurals, because I didn't have to. Ultimately, it was about the emotion of the protagonist and what she's experiencing. And she's not a detective. She's not a police officer. She's not a lawyer or anything. So as that gave me a kind of a nice out there in that she's just a regular citizen and I could write through her eyes. And so if she gets it wrong, that's okay. So if I get it wrong, that's okay.
Right. And you know, one of my favorite lines, I had it written down because I was going to just tell you that I love this moment in the story, and you just sort of hit on it a little bit. It's when she's thinking, I'm not a lawyer, not a detective, and I don't know how to get my husband the justice he deserves, but I'm a fucking Bruja and I know women who can help.
Yes.
That was a great moment.
And that was, I would say, one of those quantum leap moments that I knew was going to happen from early on in the story, even though it takes a while to get there within the course of the plot and everything. But I had jotted that down in my journal earlier on. And by the time I finally was there writing it, I was actually crying because I was like, this is her big moment. Like when she realizes, you know, and her eyes are opened, and it felt really cathartic. So I'm glad that that spoke to you.
Yes.
Something that really speaks to me in this work, and probably in everything of yours that I've read, is just that you seem to have a lot of sexual agency for female characters, which I appreciate. Being kind of a sex and love writer, I noticed that. So I like that. But you've also made some decisions in this book for some of the women characters that could be a little adversarial to a reader here or there. So how were you juggling your idea of how much you wanted the audience to like your protag and how much you just didn't care?
I would say that as I was writing and as I was really living through Eva's experience, I just didn't care. And it never occurred to me. Yeah, I really didn't. And it didn't occur to me that she was going to be perceived as unlikable. And it was a surprise to me when I go through and I look at reviews and I see that there are some people who were potentially turned off by some of the choices that she makes. And that's okay, to each their own. And I understand and appreciate those perspectives. However, my whole goal here was to show a woman that I don't think gets enough attention, or not so much even attention, but she's not given the space and the voice, right? Let me rephrase this. My whole goal here was to show this woman, Eva, who has not been given in the mainstream the space to share her authentic experience and her authentic voice. And I wanted to tell her story. And so much of Eva is myself, is my family or women that I grew up with. And I wanted us to see a character who is Latina and indigenous, and yet she also has this freedom. And yes, she does sometimes make some terrible choices, but that is part of her journey. And so if it were a man, nobody would say, is he an unlikable man, right? He'd be given the space to go on his hero's journey, and that hero's journey is going to take him to hell. And that's what I wanted for Eva. She should have as much freedom to go to hell if she wants to, if she needs to. And sometimes I think that we as a society just need to reconsider what we find deviant or acceptable for women when we're learning who we are, expressing who we are. Like, I just really wanted her to have an authentic experience. And so in many ways, her experience parallels mine. And I wanted to strip away the taboos around women's sexual choices. And I wanted to be vulnerable on the page. And I feel like I achieved that. So as a writer, I'm starting to get over my hurt feelings about people not liking my characters all the time, because I do realize, you know, I mean, I cried about it, I have to admit, when I read some of the Goodreads reviews. But ultimately, I'm not here to fit in to any box. Like, that's the point, is that I'm trying to show these characters who do not fit in. And I think that we will find each other, you know, those of us who've been on the margins, and there are readers who've been waiting for Eva. And I'm just so grateful that she's reaching those who need her.
Well, one thing I want to talk about are the ghost scenes. I really love the ghost scenes and think you did them so skillfully. I was wondering if you had fun writing them and if you could talk about it from a craft perspective, how you found the balance of incorporating those moments without letting them totally take over the narrative.
I loved writing the ghost scenes. I think that might have been one of the most fun parts as well. And that really felt like, again, the magic of it was just happening on the page. It was just coming out. And so sometimes I didn't even know. I hadn't planned that something magical or something haunted was going to happen. And then it would just happen. So at the funeral, like what happens at the funeral, I didn't know that was going to happen until it happened. And so that was pretty cool. So to a certain extent, the crafting of it, I would say that I am just open to the possibility that I've created this world. I've built this world. I can trust this world. And it's going to organically unfold before me if I'm just stay receptive and open to it. I really do write into the underbelly. You know, I go there in this hero's journey and I'm like, okay, I think of it like Stranger Things, and the characters go through a portal and then they're just in this other dimension. And that's how writing is very much for me. And sometimes I close my eyes and I have to make sure that I'm typing on the right letters. I have to open my eyes and make sure. But like, I go into this kind of meditative trance state where I might be listening to music and I have lit my candles and I'm just like, I'm going on an adventure. And so in that receptive space, the ghosts are ready. They're already there and they've been waiting. And so they just come out. That's one aspect of it, just that receptiveness to the inklings that I think are always around us, but we tune out sometimes. And, you know,
yes.
I have to write this story, you know, it has this certain plot and I have characterization I have to do. And we have all of these check marks that we have to go through. But I feel like in my writing, I always allow for just weirdness to happen. It's like, what strange thing is going to happen now? And then follow it, right? It's like, look at that ghost. Let me see where they're taking me. And then other times I have known that the ghost was going to be integral to the plot. And I think that especially in River Woman, River Demon, the crafting of it is that she is an unreliable narrator because she's suffering from these PTSD blackouts. And so the blurred lines that I was trying to create for a really fun reader experience is it real or not, right? Is it in her head or not? And so I wanted everything to be filtered through her experience, but then I also needed to have characters outside of her who were seeing or not these things. And so it was very, very fun to blur those lines. What are her children's perceptions of her experience? And so it was fun to go in and see like, okay, do they see it or not? The reader doesn't really know, you know? And so I would write the scene and then I would go back through and look, okay, what is a reader going to believe here about this? And so it was a lot of fun playing with expectations like that.
Awesome. Well, we are really looking forward to hearing you read an excerpt from this book, River Woman, River Demon. But before we do that, let's have Ran tell us about today's cocktail, which was custom created for this book.
Today's booktail cocktail is called the Rum River, and we're calling it that because the river motif in your novel is so strong, and we also thought this would make a tasty drink. The recipe's on the blog if you'd like to make one and enjoy it with us while you listen at home. Here are the ingredients. 5 mint leaves, 1 teaspoon sugar, 2 lime wedges, 2 ounces of white or pineapple rum or lemon soda if you're doing alcohol-free, 1.5 ounces of pineapple juice, jalapeno slices, 2 shakes of orange bitters, which are optional. In a cocktail shaker, muddle the mint, lime wedges, and sugar. Add the rum, pineapple juice, and jalapeno, however much heat you like, and some ice. Give it a shake. Strain it into a glass. If you're going alcohol-free, you top with lemon soda. Shake on the bitters and the garnish with mint lime wedge or a pineapple slice.
That sounds so amazing. I want to be having it right now. Jen, would you like to tell us a little about the passage you'll be reading for us today?
Yes, and I also want to say that I love the drink recipe, and it also feels very much like one of the spells in the book. And so I could just totally imagine Eva like making this as a spell.
I'm so glad.
Thank you, Ren. So I'm going to read, even though I was thinking, oh, dang, I would love to read a ghost passage now. I'm going to read the preface to the novel, which is the very first scene. And I think that it tells us about what Eva has been experiencing and how it's going to inform the decisions that she makes when she, you know, she finds her friend dead toward the beginning of the book. We're going to understand the decisions that she makes. And I feel like I worked hard to contextualize her because she's going to be unreliable. And I wanted her not necessarily to be likable, like I said, but I didn't want the reader to be annoyed with her all the time. And so I wanted to make sure we understand, we feel empathy for her. And I hope that that's what I've done in the first chapter.
Excellent. Please go ahead.
Okay. October 18th. It isn't the first time I hear a woman howling from the water. The river that flows alongside my property keeps me close to karma, even as it reminds me of my apple-cheeked friend who drowned when we were 15-year-olds in the girldom, woman-lost space where karma got caught, where she ghosts the borderlands between almost woman and never. In my Mexica culture, a woman forever yowls beside a ditch bank, or a girl, depending on which story you believe. She's supposed to be a mother, but in some versions, she never grows beyond round-breasted girlhood. She bears the body for mothering, but drowns before she's given the chance. The water laps over the sides of the tub, jarring me back. I flip the faucet off with my toes and recline deeper, staring out the window at the waxing moon. A sliver of candlelight against the glass sends a shadowing across my center, where it aches. I hold my breath and lower my head into the bathwater, eyes wide, suds filming across my eyeballs as I attempt again to view the world the way she saw it in the end. Each time I plunge myself beneath the surface, karma appears. Girl I loved most in the world. Girl, they say I drowned. Nothing comes we haven't conjured or called one way or another. I blink the spume away, staring at the bloated moon above, its face as round as last I saw Karma's. The alcohol sopping my memory doesn't help. Vodka tonight. It sloshes at the edges so I can't remember when I went from my hot shop, where I must have spent hours, the furnace running, unable to create anything worthwhile, just imperfect glass for the junk pile, to the tub. Nor can I recall why I chose the bathwater over the warmth of my bed and Jericho's body, or why the water beckons perpetually, calls me under. When I shut my eyes again, the moon disappears. How long did karma hold her breath, I wonder, every time as I hold my own, before she too vanished from this world. An oxbow lake still waters. It begins as a meander from a river offshoot. Then, if the earth were a body, and of course the earth is a body, where the limb breaks, the blood water pools, and it pools past the wrist into the palm of the land where it lingers, horseshoe or half moon, a crescent lake, a scythe. We swam there, Karma and I, in the frog pond that belonged to Sammy's uncle, out past the fields of alfalfa, onions, and honeydew, beyond the river that sloughs across the border, frothing and foaming as it rolls from Mexicali to Calexico, like sisters sprung from different families, like Karma and I, as close as friends could get before one of them drowns the other. It was toxic, that water, that night, every subsequent night, corroded by the swamp of memory. We three friends under the cover of mesquite and moonshine, only the weak beams of a porch light streaming across the backyard. Inside his uncle's house, Sammy's older brother Dom must have been watching television. I can still see the faint blue haze of the screen through the undraped windows. But it's the image of the three of us outside that crystallizes moments before we step into the water. Karma in the clearing, her body and mine rounded in similar ways, making us both appear much older than we were. And our faces were round, too, in the way of girls still emerging from pubescence. Beside us, Sammy is string-beaned and lank, tall enough to be a man, but so thin, he's more like the outline of a man. crickets chirping, desert beetles scuttling, devil weed and sandburr scratching our naked calves and thighs, and as we tiptoe closer to the water, the hard-packed dirt and bramble give way to softer, loamier mud water that squishes between our toes until the grasses grow softer too, soothing the scrapes on the pads of our feet as we ease into the dark body. We slide in deeper and deeper until we're up to our necks and treading, unbothered by the grunge and slick of river weeds and mossy plants floating upward like witch's hair. Sammy swims closer to us, splashing playfully. We're laughing and splashing back, the water cool from the nighttime, but not so cold we can't catch our breath. Between our gulping laughter and the sloshing of a broken river lake, if karma speaks, her words are only a mirage, a manifestation of my longing to hear her voice again. Desire compels me to fabricate what I can't remember. She might have joked about our breasts floating on the surface of the water, or warned of leeches clasping our slick skin. To which Sammy might have rejoined that only frogs populated this pond, perhaps catfish or carp, certainly not leeches. Karma might have said she was thirsty. Or had I asked for something to drink? Who sent Sammy inside for cokes? We watch, giggling, as Sammy scampers, giraffe-legged and bare-assed as a newborn, toward his uncle's, slamming the door behind him. I'd like to believe Karma whispered, "I love you, Eva," before she dove to the murky depths. Instead, I remember the horseplay, the pushing each other harder and holding each other longer under the water until we shove each other in the ribs or kick each other's knees and burst through the surface, coughing and spluttering. Our bodies press together, at first maybe in annoyance or mock anger, and then in something stickier, something that pooled inside me when we grabbed hands to run through the alleyways toward the donut shop or fell to my bed laughing. In the shadows, her blonde hair, soaked and matted to her face and neck, nearly matched the onyx of my own. Her blue eyes grayed. Her breath smelled faintly of pepperoni and Dr. Pepper. And as she pulls away from me toward the swampy bottom, before she disappears, I shake and shake the memory, but it will not tell. Was I grasping for her fingers as she slipped downward out of my reach? Or was I pushing her under?
Wow, that is such a moving passage. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I love that.
That was so excellent. I hope more readers engage and go get this book. Do you have any new projects you can tell us about in the pipeline? What comes next in your creative works?
Yes. So my daughter and I are working on a middle grade novel that we're getting ready to send off to our agent to send to publishers. And it is a Latina, indigenous, biracial protagonist who is on an adventure that's cultural. And it's very much like indigenous Percy Jackson in there. So there's monsters and gods. And I'm just very, very excited about this. And I'm working on that with my daughter, who is 12 years old.
What a great project for you two to do together. It sounds so fun too.
Yeah, we're loving it. And it's funny because this is our Quantum Leap revision, really, where we had a whole other book that has the seed idea, but we rewrote it after realizing that the story was really a little bit different than what we'd originally intended. And so the first book we wrote during the pandemic when I was homeschooling her. And then just over the past year, we've completely revised it and we're so excited to send it out to the publishing world. So fingers crossed.
Oh yes, definitely.
And then the other thing I'm working on is a novel for adults that's called Salt Bones. And it takes place where I grew up in the Imperial Valley on the Mexicali border in the same location as Jubilee, my second novel. But this one will incorporate more of the elements of Trinity Site and River Woman, River Demon, and that it will be a suspense, a thriller. There's supernatural elements in it. And it's also telling a story of ecological disaster. I'm thinking of it as a kind of retelling of the Demeter and Persephone myth. So there's a strong mother-daughter link here. And I'm excited. I'm working on that now.
That sounds amazing. Wow, you're so productive and doing all these amazing projects.
Thanks. Right now, especially with the new novel, I'm in that place where it's just staying open to the strange and the weird. And it has the skeleton, but I'm not exactly sure where it's going yet. I'm in the dark forest, but I'm trying to embrace that and have fun with it and really not pressure myself to know everything right now. It's okay that things are coming to me and that it will be a process.
Speaking of that, that sounds like good advice for writers to be more open to things and just not so structured and planned. And I was wondering, what other advice would you offer to new writers?
Oh, I have so much advice.
Well, give it to us. We'll take your top three things or whatever you want to share.
Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest things for me is that you have to stay so tenacious, because the publishing world is going to tell us no in every way that it can possibly think to tell us no. And yet we know that our stories matter. We know that our voices matter and that we have something to say. And so I think that the biggest piece of advice that I could give anyone is just to keep believing in yourself. And then along with that, to keep revising and not be afraid to re-see your stories. Because like I said, all of my books start out as one thing, and then by the end, they've transformed into something that I hadn't even realized. And so sometimes believing in ourselves also means trusting the process and trusting that the work is sometimes wiser than we are. As I said, I come from a poetry background, and we often say the poem is wiser than the poet. And I feel like that's true in a lot of ways, in that let it teach us, right? Let this experience teach us. And so I think that as I've loosened up and I'm not like, okay, I know this is the exact story and this is how I have to tell it. Whenever I do that, there tends to be a lot of pressure on myself. That's when the writer's block comes. That's when the depression sets in. Like if I'm getting a lot of no's in the publishing world. But when I'm more open to learning from the experience itself and letting the work transform into whatever it needs to be, that's when I tend to remember the true joy of writing. And that joy, like I said, I'm a bruja, and so I firmly believe this, and I hope that you'll embrace a little bit of woo-woo, you know, in allowing for the possibility that when we're writing from that space of joy, when we're writing from that space of believing in ourselves and what the work is teaching us, you'd be surprised at how many doors open just organically. I often say, you know, keep knocking on the door. And then if you can't get through the door, go find a fire escape and climb in and get in there however you can. And I still believe that. I know for marginalized writers, we do have to just find other ways to get in, because the doors aren't always going to open for us. But as a bruja, I found that when I'm just in my truth, when I stay there and I stay grounded in what I know that I'm doing and the road that I'm supposed to be on, doors do just open, and I don't have to knock so hard. They're just open.
That is really, really helpful advice. I appreciate that so much. Well, thank you. And thank you for spending time with us today at Book Tales. We really enjoyed talking with you and hearing you read your work.
Thank you both so much. I loved being here. I appreciated your support with Jubilee and having me back for River Woman, River Demon. And your literary citizenship is just so beautiful. And aww. I feel like women supporting women, right? That's where it's at. So thank you.
That's it. Yay. Absolutely. Yes. And everybody, please order Jen's book, River Woman, River Demon, and be sure to check out www.hotredheadmedia.com and subscribe to the blog for more information on the Book Tales readings and drinks. Also, subscribe to this podcast, which releases once a month, for more conversations with amazing literary authors. Thanks again for listening to Book Tales. See you next time.